Good evening, and welcome to The Cult of Sloth, a talk show that will soon to be known as probably the worst, maybe the best, who knows, podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. First of all, this is a really scary and difficult thing for me to do, getting outside of my comfort zone, getting into the podcasting world, something I've always wanted to do, never really had the time to do it or the dedication to do it, and now here we are, getting into the podcasting world. I'm shaking in my boots right now, sipping on a Diet Dr. Pepper, hopefully trying to calm down and come up with a decent intro for you guys. It's been a very interesting year for all of us in 2020, and hopefully this can be some entertainment to help get us through the pandemic and into the future, and maybe 2021 will be the year that all the changes happen for us, that everything good happens to us and amazing. But enough about that. Tonight we have a really, really interesting show for you. Thought about, you know, one of the people I've been talking about starting a podcast with for a very long time is one of my coworkers. Goes by the name of Hoover. You'll know him from the Twitch streams that we do, playing games, PUBG, constantly harassing him, just genuinely internet bullying him, office bullying him. He's a really good guy, though. He's a veteran of the U.S. Army, ex-Army drill sergeant, and I'm excited that he's decided to come on here to talk about his life and religion and how he came into it, got out of it, and what his just general overall view of theology and the world around us is. And I'm sure we'll get into some dumb topics, some good topics, some fun topics, maybe even some boring topics, but hopefully you stick around and enjoy it, and I really look forward to it. So I'd like you guys to give a warm welcome, a sloth welcome, slow clap it, loud clap it, clap them cheeks, I don't give a shit, do whatever you want, but give a warm welcome to one of my closest friends, an amazing person and a person that I look up to, Christopher Hoover. Welcome, Chris.
Welcome.
I don't really know how to transition here out of the. We're just gonna go into it, and I introduced you as a recovering religiolistic person. But if you want to go into and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I went on a mission for the church, for the Mormon Church, when I was 19. I should back up a little further. My family itself really isn't all that active in the church. It wasn't, even though my mom would probably consider herself very active. In retrospect, it's almost like she did it kind of for, she had this uninvolved version of being a participant in the church, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, because my family was the same way with the Catholic Church. But so you were born into and raised traditional Mormon?
Yeah, non polygamist.
So that but that's a, like that's actually a thing that's practiced, like it's a normal practice, I guess, because it's something that you always hear. But it's fascinating to me, because the Mormon religion is something that you always hear stories and wives' tales about, but you never get any truth or out of it.
Yeah. I definitely know that people have been very... So somebody that we work with is kind of higher up, I think, is LDS. And I've always heard like these weird things about him. That were related to the Mormon religion, like that somebody that one of our coworkers kind of had moved up because he had some pictures of this guy like doing some stuff to animals or something because he was LDS. And I just kind of shake my head and like, oh my. Granted, so, I'm not like this big time like pro Mormon guy.
So it was the old adage of, I've got pictures of him fucking a goat, and that's why I get promoted.
Yeah. I mean, based on the things that I've been into lately, it's not the worst thing I've heard. I'm not going to lie. I have to into Crowley and some of his church, but that's a different podcasted subject all in itself. But I mean, yeah. It's interesting to me because I've had a lot of people, you know, in my travels with my career traveling the country. I've spent time in Utah and I have lots of close friends that are Mormon. I've always made fun of people, like, you know, the fun making fun of your friends type of shit. Oh, you know, I think I had a fantasy football team one year that was the Caffeinated Sins, you know, to poke fun at a Mormon friend that was in the league. But I've never really taken the time to learn anything about it, which is why we're here. So I guess, so back to your childhood, you were raised in a Mormon family, non-practicing.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah, but even though we were non-practicing, I think my mom really wanted me to go on a mission, and that's not really why I did, but there was this one nerdy guy that I used to go to church with, and he went on a mission, and he came back, and like how he kind of matured while he was gone kind of made me want to do the same thing. So I really didn't go on a mission to kind of appease my parents. I literally did it for myself, and so I went on my mission, came back, went into the army. In the infantry, then went to college. And throughout that period of time, there was kind of like some controversy in the church. If you talk to anybody that's LDS right now, I think they kind of remember it different depending on who they are. And but what? What I remember is there was the Proposition 8 or whatever that law in California where it was about gay marriage, and the church like spent people's tithing money to oppose it and try to enact these laws that would kind of prevent these people from kind of marrying the ones that they cared about and loved and things. You know, as much as a religious person at the time that I was, I didn't feel that it was right to be politically engaged and forcing people to follow a religion that they didn't have anything to do with. And then that's what kind of sent me down the path of like questioning things. Then I kind of researched it more and kind of realized how ridiculous it was. And I kind of slowly learned things that kind of pulled me away from it. So,
it was kind of, it was almost like the, I guess segregation isn't the right word. The discrimination that the church has towards various, you know, groups such as the homosexual community and stuff that really kind of started your transition away from the Mormon church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I kind of just, it kind of got to the point to where I felt that me and Kelly both, that if the church was in fact true, that a lot of these things would not have happened in the way that they did. And because of that, we basically stopped believing in it. And part of the reason why I started out the way that I did, that I said that I wanted to go on a mission for me, that I really felt the church was true at the time. If somebody in the church that was active right now were to hear me say that I basically lost my faith in the church, that they would be like, oh, well, you probably never really had it to begin with. But I felt like I actually had a very strong faith. And it was kind of my brain that talked me, that said, you're relying on your feelings too much. And this stuff, essentially, you've been manipulated.
Sure.
And oh, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, it's just one of the things when you're young is you're always, sounds cool, it's a group, you want to belong to something. I mean, the books I'm reading right now is in regards to sort of the hive mind, how we just want to be a part of something. I think when you're young, religion resonates with you because it's a group. And I mean, God's sake, when people are so terrified of death like we are, as a society, you want something to be, you want something to look forward to. If I died tomorrow, I don't want eternal darkness and worm food and all that garbage, you know? So I think that the, you know, going on the mission and trying to find the journey of spirituality and trying to better yourself, I never discredit anyone for that in the church. I mean, I was raised Catholic, very, I mean, my grandparents, devout Catholic. When they found out my wife wasn't baptized, I thought that they were going to fucking go insane. Even demon spawn children and shit, like,
right?
So religion has always been confusing to me, though, but I've never really fully bought into it. I mean, I don't have the attention span for it. I went when I was in getting my first communion and shit, I was just there to jackass around at the church and get in trouble, and my parents were, you know, beat me down because I was the class clown in school and in church school Sunday. Last thing I wanted to do as a kid was go sit and stand and kneel and stand and kneel on Sunday. So I guess the long way around this point I'm getting to is spiritual, you know, trying to find yourself spiritually is something that as we look for all the time.
Yeah.
So to want to go on a mission, and I think I don't know anything about the Mormon. What I hear most, a lot of it is just, you know, just be a good person to your fellow neighbor, and is the general consensus. I think that's the consensus with most religion. People I've talked to that, you know, aren't devout, strict Mormon, they're kind of like a family-oriented church. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is. And don't get me wrong, there is some good things about it. I do think that it did teach me a good foundation of, you know, treating people kindly and with respect, and just generally being a good, nice, kind person and having patience with others, and also at the same time not tolerating certain things, even though they may have defined the wrong things to be intolerant of. It seems to me like there's so much hypocrisy, and it's almost like they're on the right path, but since they don't want people to think for themselves, they kind of want to dictate what should be acceptable and what shouldn't, and people allow the religion to be kind of like an accomplice to immoral acts. That's kind of what I didn't like about it. And
so when you say being an accomplice to acts, I guess you'd elaborate, like, what do you mean?
Well, a lot of times I think people blame religion for things and bad things that happen, but I don't necessarily think it's religion's fault. I think that religion might be there to validate what somebody already wants to do, but I don't think it's the instigator. It's like this, it's like blaming guns for violence, right? it's a tool, not necessarily it's not some cognizant thing that actually performs an action. It's more like a way to justify a piece of crap thing that you want to do. And that's why I call it an accomplice and not necessarily the instigator, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, total sense. You know, my wife and I were talking about this today because I'm utterly obsessed with spirituality thanks to learning more about Aleister Crowley and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and trying to find out more about secular spirituality. Just because spirituality is fascinating to me. But that, you know, that, like you said, the gun didn't kill someone. It was a tool. It was a device that was used to kill someone. It's like COVID-related deaths. Had the gun not been there, would the person have really murdered? You know, had religion not been there, would you really be so prejudiced? it's not you personally, but would a person be prejudiced against homosexuality or someone that's different had there not been the church, you know?
Right.
It's a really, it's an interesting point to make. It's an interesting conclusion to come to kind of guide your way out. I mean, what are, in the Mormon church, what are some of the things, like, I guess I don't, whatever you're comfortable getting into as far as practicing the religion, I'm just, personal, I'd like to know what it's like to practice the religion.
Well, I don't think that there's really anything that's, for the most part, there's nothing really that's controversial. There's like a lot of things that are oddly, how do I say this? If you didn't grow up in it, you would think this is kind of strange. However, I probably technically shouldn't say that because people do get baptized and they don't think it's strange when they do it, like things that happen in the temple, which is like the ceremonial things.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that people that generally join the church afterwards, they kind of expect some of that out of a religion. And, you know, and I never really understood that until I actually went to a Catholic service. And a lot of the things that go on in the temple actually happens in a Catholic service. At least I remember it being that way, how you like stand up and kneel down and you do like all these different things. It's actually been so long, I can't remember. I just remember thinking at the time when I was at the Catholic service, wow, this is oddly ceremonial.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is 100%. Bring up Catholic, I can tell you that.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of symbolic things in the temple, and there's definitely lots of resources out there if anybody wanted to look at it. I think there's actually YouTube videos that basically say what goes on in there. But honestly, one of the biggest things that I remember about being active in the church was the amount of time that it took to actually fulfill what you were expected to fulfill. And any given Sunday, I was pretty much always in a leadership position. So I had to be there at like 8 o'clock in the morning for these stupid meetings where you just kind of said the same crap that led to nothing. And then you had the regular meetings that started at like 9 o'clock. And then that went to 12 of just regular church stuff. And then afterwards, you had all these other responsibilities that you had to do. You had to go and visit people in their home. You had to, like, throughout the week, you had to prepare lessons. You had to do youth activities. And
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
It was so
it's a second job. Your religion became a second job that you're not paid for.
Right. And, you know, generally speaking, people did it and they felt to themselves, well, this is, I enjoy doing it, and, you know, I'm doing my service to baby Jesus or whatever.
Doing God's work. Doing God's work.
So it was justified. In fact, when I went on my mission, I had actually saved up the entire amount to go on the mission myself by working two jobs while I was in high school and last summer before I left, and I had saved up like $12,000 to go, and I literally
Jesus.
Paid for my entire mission myself. And I feel like, if I were to describe, sum it up, it's just like a bunch of wasted work. Even if I believed in it, I felt like I was wasting time doing, being unproductive. We were like a moving service in a way. Like people would move in and they'd be like, oh, we need some volunteers. And I'd always volunteer to help them move. And then, and that was it. It was just like, we became like this service for, I don't know.
So it's a lot of the community involvement is just helping members of the church, what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Just, you know, hey, we have a new member of that's moving to town. We need some young, strong labor to come help move them in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's a community involvement, which is nice. I mean, that's more than you see out of most religions anymore. What was it like going on your mission? Like, where did you go on your mission?
I went to Salt Lake City.
Oh, so you did a local mission. You didn't go out. You didn't go to like Fiji or
no.
vaccinate kids in Africa or something.
No. And, you know, I don't really know how they select. Well, somebody that's in the church say it's through prayer and God sends you there. But each mission obviously brings its own challenges. If you go somewhere else, you have to learn a different language. If you actually go to Salt Lake City, there's lots of strange challenges that kind of are associated with that, because you're kind of like in the middle of it. So you have these people that really love and support you, and then you have these other people that are tired of it and hate you, right? Because everybody that they know is all their neighbors are LDS, and they're trying to get them to join the church, and they think it's bullshit, you know. So they don't like. So it's like these way huge extremes of anti-Mormonism and like pro-Mormonism. And there's also like all these hot women around that think that, hey, I'm going to marry that guy, you know, when I get off his mission. And it kind of leads to a lot of weird temptations and a lot of it definitely has its own challenges.
I mean, being an outsider and spending a considerable amount of time in what I would consider some formative years of my life, you know, started traveling with the railroad at 19 years old. I mean, spending considerable amount of time in Salt Lake City and Provo and throughout Utah, I seen the outside of it. And I know I was the person that was like, the goddamn Mormons are back in my fucking house wanting to talk to me and tell me about Jesus. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I mean, it's got to be difficult going out on a mission and, you know, out there to, you know, quote unquote, spread the word of God and, you know, recruit new members or build your army of Jesus or whatever the hell it is that you justify yourself to doing, or that the church justifies to doing, and get all this hatred, and you're just a kid out there, just what you think is right for God. I mean, it's got to be difficult. On top of, you know, you're a kid and you're like, I saved up all this money to do this mission and help the world, and going to fucking Salt Lake City and my friends going to fucking Fiji. What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, I'm sure that's probably not what everyone's like. I know that's what I would be like, because I'm a selfish little piece of shit.
You know, honestly, I was a little bummed, but everybody was like, oh my God, it takes a special person to go there. You know, I don't know if they were just trying to make me feel better.
That sounds like they're trying to make you feel better, man. I mean, I'm not here. I'm not here to fucking ruin your life, but I think they were just trying to make you feel better.
Well, at the same time, though, I do feel like I'm a pretty smart guy. I mean, I'm not like Albert Einstein or anything, but I definitely do take care to make sure that I, even when I was in the church, and I think this is actually what doomed the church in my mind, was that I do try to make connect dots and make sure that things make sense. And when they don't, I tend to not ignore it. The last point that I made is probably technically what got me out of the church, but it did actually help me talk to and get on the same level of a lot of people that I actually got to join the church, because I could say to them, well, this is how this works, or this is the truth of that. And, you know, I always wanted to get down to the root of things and try to understand things on a real core level, you know, like, a lot of times people don't want to admit or even give consideration to things that are so outside of, I don't know how to say it, like outside of what they think. But I was always, and I always have been willing to do that. Several points are like we don't actually really know where the Bible came from. And the funny thing is that in Salt Lake, people would like criticize the Book of Mormon for being so recent, but at least we had a story for where it came from. It's funny. You go talk to a Christian and they think, oh, the Bible is just true, right? That's just the given. And however it ended up is how God meant it to be. But where they fail to recognize is that we really don't know where it came from.
Yeah, and we don't know which drunk person wrote.
Right. And funny thing is that the Bible itself is, on a very core level, the only witness of Jesus. So without the Bible, Jesus technically does not exist. So if you can't justify the Bible from outside resources, which you cannot do technically, Jesus becomes this fictional character. And one thing that the Book of Mormon did is it said inside of it that the Book of Mormon is here to be a second witness of Jesus, so that it was something that was there to validate the Bible itself. And that was actually something I always felt was necessary. And people that just accepted the Bible as truth didn't really care. So there were some good points in the LDS Church doctrinally that I thought made a lot of sense.
So you're telling me that you thought it made sense that, now I could be wrong. I mean, I'm getting my knowledge from fucking South Park and the Book of Mormon musical. Fucking Joseph Smith had to wear special glasses and look into a hat and translate the fucking stones. I mean, I guess you're right. At least they had a way. They knew how the Bible was created, but I mean, come on.
Well, that's like part of the faith part of it. You know, if you think about it, it's not that. So it kind of like it becomes like magical in a way. And there's like some part of that that has to do with faith, even though people don't talk about that aspect of it. It's like if you want somebody to believe something, if you just make it unbelievable, that's kind of a way to like help them believe it in like this weird jacked up sort of way. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, it totally makes sense. I get it. And I'm not trying to smash it and be like, be a rotten little bastard about it. I find it comical from the outside looking in, because I mean, I was a devout Catholic. I believed in the Bible, you know, and I, you know, I thought that every Sunday, if I ate a little cracker that was supposed to embody the, you know, supposed to be the embodiment of the body of Christ, and then drink a little bit of fucking, the church I went to actually fed wine to kids, but a little bit of grape juice today, I'm like, oh, I'm drinking Jesus's blood and it's going to make me all fucking super religious and I'm going to be a superhero of God, you know? So I believed that shit. I thought that I was doing good. I, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, holy fuck, we're eating people and drinking their blood. This is cool. I mean, I was kind of a dumb kid, but Jesus. So I get it. I get the faith. Faith is what we all are looking for, especially in a scary anymore. Faith and spirituality is a
right. So, at any rate, once related to actually what you said there, that was actually one of the things that kind of pissed me off. Because you hear like the Joseph Smith story, right, and how he translated the Book of Mormon.
Yes.
And they if you look around at some of the pictures and artistry that depict this event, there's like he's like sitting at this table and he has this stone that he's like using, and it's magical and it's believable and it's not dumb, right? It's like God has like imbued this piece of equipment that's there to aid him translate it. And that it's like, it's kind of like in a way similar to speaking in tongues, right? I knew this guy that was Pentecostal, right? And the fact that, you know, he would go to church and people would be speaking this gibberish was like a sense of pride and a faith builder in him, even though it was pointless and mystical nonsense, right? I'm not even trying to bash him. I'm just trying to objectively say that that's what it was, and that's kind of what this depiction of what Joseph Smith did was to me. It was this faith building bit of ridiculousness that just aided in the faith building. And what drew me away from the church was that it's officially documented that that's picture depicting what Joseph Smith did was untrue and misleading. And what actually happened was he actually sat there like on with a top hat in his between his legs, and he would bend over and stick his fucking face in this top hat. And that's what he would do to translate. Yeah. So if you like take what would this artist depicted as the translation of the Book of Mormon, it wasn't what people that were there and Joseph Smith himself said actually happened. It was more like this romanticizing some ridiculously dumb thing.
But don't we do that with all of our faith?
And to me, I felt like I was manipulated and lied to, and that made me so mad, right?
Of course, it would make me mad too. I mean, that'd be like finding out that Superman doesn't actually fly, he just jumps with style. You know,
I can't hear you for talking, but...
Oh no, I'm talking.
Don't know why.
Oh no. I'm talking and I'm lighting up green.
Nevertheless, I think it kind of illustrates, and I think we'd actually kind of brought up this other thing that one of the things I wanted to make a subject of a podcast on, which is somewhat related, was how the church kind of like puts its priorities in like these really fucked up ways. And I say fucked up because when I came back off my mission, when people like would cut me, it would almost be like they stabbed me because I had been so brainwashed into thinking that cussing was so bad, right?
Yeah, of course.
And if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, like the LDS church like rips people off financially all the time. And how much worse is that than someone dropping an F-bomb, right?
Exactly.
And that's like the weird priority of morals that they have. And pornography is like one that's like extremely jacked up.
I mean, that's an interesting topic too, because you always, I mean, pornography is a big thing in all religion.
You're cutting out again.
Sexuality is a bad thing in religion and pornography. Can you hear me? Hello. So now after the technical difficulties, pornography and sexuality has always been kind of a weird thing to me with the church that's kind of banned. It's like, I mean, I remember my parents found, you know, pornographic magazines when I was that I was hiding under my, having to go to the church and tell the priest, I'm sorry that I looked at naked ladies and I don't really want to go to hell. And I remember being like really upset that my parents were telling me, you're going to go to hell and the devil's going to, you know, burn you for all eternity. And Jesus fuck. I think it was more to them embarrassment that they didn't want to have to be the ones to talk to me about the birds and the bees, that it was natural and healthy to, you know, be attracted to naked ladies and breasts and titties and vaginas and all that, you know.
Right.
I just think it's a weird thing. And you bring up the point of the LDS church ripping people off. Like, isn't it a common, I've always heard that it's a common thing that you donate like a portion of your paycheck monthly, like you give them a stipend monthly.
Yeah, it's 10%.
Wow, 10%.
Yeah,
that you get nothing back for, that you could put into a 401k or in the stock market, and you could go buy fucking hookers with it and get more out of it.
Right, and that's what pissed me off too, is that they took this money that we gave as tithing, and they used it to oppose Proposition 8 or support. I can't remember what proposition, but it basically used tithing money to prohibit people in California that were gay or lesbian from getting married. And that really just infuriated me that they took my money and did that.
But isn't that something in itself that's wrong with religion and how it's so involved in politics and people's lives? And I mean, just down to the basic human right portion of it, you know, I mean, right. we could have a whole entire, a 4-day podcast about religion and politics. The fact that you seen that in the church and you said that this is wrong is amazing to me, especially like I said, with some of the literature that I'm reading on psychology and group behavior of people, you know, when we get into groups and we start the group movements, like you said, with the speaking in tongues or the praying, the standing and kneeling, and you know, people tend to go outside of who they actually are when you're in the groups, you know, when you're part of that in group, and for you to come out of it and say, man, this is fucked up that we're telling people how to live that aren't even a part of our church. You know, people who love each other and want to get married can't do it because something that I'm supporting and I don't want to be a part of it. That's a, you know, for lack of a better words, that's a beautiful transition. You don't hear that from people very often, and it's impressive, and that's, it's fascinating right. to me.
Well, to be honest with you, I think that that's why I brought it, even brought up some of the other ideas for other podcasts related, even related to like the BLM movement. You know, like it's hard to be that guy that says, I don't like what you're doing right at this moment, and I'm not going to support you. Or to say in the middle of a crowd of non-supporters, when you see something happening, hey, this is not right, I'm going to support those guys, right? It's hard to make the transition either way. And that's essentially what I did with the church. I said, I can't support this anymore. I'm out. Right.
And that's so interesting. And I just left the church because I didn't want to dedicate time, and I'm stingy with my money, and I, you know, liked poor. Like drinking and fucking and partying and not going to church on Sunday. So, you know, mine was a selfish reason for leaving the church. I didn't to find out, you know, that's really what ultimately led to it. Fantastic. And I've read up on like the Ku Klux Klan, and what one story that really resonated with me that this brings up is you know, the Charlottesville incident that happened, was it 2016, 2017, with the I guess the alt-right protest that was going on, or the rally or whatever, where the people got killed. One of the people, you know, one of the gentlemen that started it with the intent of, hey, we just wanted to get people together that had the same view as us. It never started out as like a white power. It was more of a, and I'm not saying that we not okay, or it's more okay to have white pride. It's just very insensitive in the day and age that we live in. But, you know, one of his interviews was, I was caught up in the moment. You know, I was outside of myself in this group screaming these horrible things. And, you know, I hope that that's not how the world sees me for all of eternity, because that's not who I am. It's just get caught up in the moment. And the book that I'm reading spells it out beautifully that, you know, people do these terrible, horrendous things when they become part of an in and part, you know, I don't want to get too deep into it, because obviously something we can talk in detail about on another podcast or another day, but it just talks about how social media and online and with dedicated news sources for biased news and all of that, it exasperates the situation. But it's hard for me to take, I guess the long way around what I'm trying to get at is, you know, there's certain people that are just assholes in general, but for the most part, people that are in religion, you know, they're just looking for something. And I try not to be too terribly critical of them, just because I don't understand.
Right.
I mean, it's not,
yeah,
it's not a good thing. You know, a lot of, you know, there's good things that come from the Mormon Church is historically one of the first ones in a disaster to be donating food and clothing and providing support, you know?
Right.
So there's good things that come out of it. But like you said, you know, start getting involved in politics and power and how we run the country, tell other people to live their lives that don't believe the same things we do. That's when it becomes too far, in my opinion.
Right.
It's just, it's interesting to me, especially, you know, as a person who doesn't understand the universe fully and personally is kind of not sure what happens at the end of our lifespan. Does our consciousness go to a general consciousness? Do we go to another universe and are we reborn? You know, I get the appeal to spirit. reality. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I do too. And, you know, it's kind of part of what I've always tried to, like, investigate, you know, where to get that stuff from outside the LDS Church, especially after I left it. I kind of became more interested in what, where to go and get that. And there's so many good books out there about the psychology of human beings and why they actually need that and where they actually can get it in alternative places. And I think that those places, for the most part, are actually really healthy places that people should technically seek out as healthy alternatives to religion in most cases.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, not to completely change the subject, but before we get too far off topic, what was it like when you left the church? I'm sure there was people that you were involved with in life that, you know, didn't think it was the right move. Or what? I mean, what was it like socially?
Well, I think it. So even though my mom wasn't really active in the church, she took a lot of pride in the fact that I did go on a mission and that I was active and I went. And she's always kind of been this like mystical person. And just to kind of illustrate that, she had this dream, or she has this. She had this vision once, quote unquote, where she found out that she was going to she was going to marry Jesus. And so she's like this really kind of self-proclaimed spiritual person that really feels like the LDS Church is true. And it's not that I hid it from her that I stopped going to church, but I didn't like actively tell her either, because it's not that I was ashamed or that I was afraid that she would rebuke me, because technically I felt like I was doing the right thing. It was, I was like, whatever she says, it's just going to be a bunch of BS and I don't want to deal with it right now. And, when she found out, that was kind of, she was sad and kind of disappointed. And I, you know, obviously she wanted me to like, she wanted to talk me out of it and all these different things. But really, for the most part, I'd say that we've kind of been left alone. And I don't know if that was because people just didn't like us or what, but, for the most part, the transition was pretty seamless, and it was actually kind of eye-opening, and my life was 10 times happier than it was before. I mean, I probably had 20 hours a week that was freed up.
I mean, that's unreal, the amount of time.
Which is insane, if you ask me.
Oh yeah, I mean, 20 hours, that's half a work week that you freed up just by leaving the church.
Right.
I mean, for some people, that's the motivating force that keeps them going through life, but yeah. That's crazy. I mean, I guess I'm curious. I was curious about it because it seems like the LDS Church is such a community. I mean, you don't go to church on Sunday as a Catholic. Everybody's going to talk shit behind your back and be bitchy that way. But it's not like, oh my God, are you okay? Who didn't go to church? Are you okay? Is everything okay with your family? They're not like checking on you. Whereas, I mean, I've heard contrary in the LDS Church. Holy shit, Chris didn't come to church this Sunday. Is he okay? Is everything okay? He didn't say he was going on vacation. He didn't schedule vacation in the church vacation planner. Just, it's wild. It's crazy. So,
right.
I mean, going back to resources for people that may be looking to, they're not sure about spirituality, what? They're not sure if they're on the right path with it, or they, you know, they just don't believe as much as they did, but they're afraid to leave the church to not get that fulfillment. What you were talking about, resources that you would suggest. I know you're not a professional and you're not a psychologist or a psychiatrist and you can't give professional help, but something from your experience, what are some of the resources that you would suggest to people from your experience?
Well, So I've kind of found a lot of solace in not psychology books, but books that allowed me to kind of be introspective about what I believe, and for me to kind of come to terms with what I was learning as I was transitioning out of the church. So there's like a slew of books that I read, and I either read or listened to audiobooks. And to be honest with you, I outside of that, I think the fact that me and Kelly did it together, that we left it together, was probably the absolute biggest help to each of us. Because if one of us was still believed, that would probably have been a big stumbling block to our marriage, because the other person has all this faith and here's the other person that's like losing it. Right. So then that would be hard for them to deal with. And so ultimately I think the fact that I chose a good spouse that is understanding and we get along and we're good and kind to each other, I think was probably the biggest substitute to religion in my own personal experience.
Absolutely. I mean, that's critical. Absolutely critical. The partner that you, I mean, that's your support network. Both were there in it together. I mean, that's something to be said in itself. I mean, did I marry a godless heathen? She married a godless heathen. We were perfect for each other. Didn't even get married in a church. We were like, fuck God, you know?
Right.
Not literally fuck God, but you know what I mean.
Right.
I mean, that's impressive to me, the fact that you stood by each other through all of it. I mean, to do it together, and losing faith is a big thing. Yeah. I mean, people crumble when they lose faith. It's just a big deal. And I mean, here you are saying all these wonderful things about your wife. I mean, I'm not making fun of you. I think it's beautiful. Fantastic.
Well, I just, so, and I think that this took a little while for her to get used to this. And to be honest, I think it's hard for anybody that gets to know me, is that I am always willing to talk about anything. And I feel like I can generally enter into any conversation, no matter what it's about, and be calm and collected and cool and look at it from a rational point of view. But you know, like it seems to me like that's not normal as a functioning human being to be able to do that. And you know, if back in the day when we were transitioning through all this, if Kelly hadn't learned that about me already, and you know, maybe I came up to her and said, hey, I think that this principle is jacked up in the church, and she wasn't willing to openly listen to me instead of like shut me down, you know, like it would have been devastating to our marriage and how we even progressed and got to where we were. But the fact that she was willing to listen and place some value on what I said and thought, I mean, there really was no substitute, I think. I don't really know what else I would have helped me more, honestly.
I mean, that's fantastic. Love to hear that. I love you and Kelly both, and my wife and I both love you guys, and it's good to hear that, because like I said, as a godless heathen that I am, you know, I tend to be that person that you talked about. You know, I fly off the handle just wildly, and then I'm like, I'm sorry, really sorry that I did that. I'm kind of an idiot, and I let my emotions lead me. And you're very analytical, and I see that in Kelly too. And it's good that you had each other to talk through and to listen and say, we're willing to do this together, because it doesn't make sense. And I get the feeling that even if one did still believe, it would be, you know, I'm not going to push it on you. You want to go, go be a part of it. Go be a part of something. I don't believe, so I can't take it.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's another thing that's important too. I mean, I keep saying, you know, losing your faith is a difficult thing to grasp with. It's difficult to grapple. To go through it together is impressive to me. I mean, it's impressive to me. I tend to be a helpless romantic. I'm like a penguin. I gave my pebble to my wife, and now I'm going to hold her egg between my feet and birth our nasty little dog child. I don't know. A helpless romantic when it comes to that sort of thing. It warms my heart to see. Not to make it weird or anything. Fuck. Be like, fuck you, dude. Silence. I mean, religion fascinates me. Spirituality fascinates me. To hear your story about it. I've never really had a chance to sit down and talk to you about it, so I figured, why not do it in a podcast for everybody to listen to and make fun of me for being completely idiotic about it, but it's crazy. It's just interesting to me to find people that lose their faith like that.
Yeah.
You don't see it. You don't see it anymore. It's either all in or not. It's all or nothing. It's an all or nothing mentality with religion.
Right.
Wow.
Good times.
Well, I do. I appreciate you coming on here and talking about it and telling us about your life and your journey in and out of the church and everything that comes with it and your opinion. I mean, I can't tell you how fascinating it is to me to hear the transition that you went through and so eloquently described.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. That's nice of you to say.
I look forward to future conversations with you. You'll always be a welcome guest on the cult, the cult of sloth. I so quaintly named it
a cult member, I guess. Again,
yeah, welcome. You're the first cult member. You're the first member of the cult. Your ceremonial robe is in the mail, and I have a wonderful painting of me translating the Book of Sloth. It's a painting of me bent over nude, reading the Bible with my butthole and writing it with my eyeballs. It's expected nice. To be displayed in your house, and I look forward to seeing you in the cult 20 hours a week minimum.
Yeah, I can't wait myself.
But seriously, it's been an honor having you on the show. I look up to you as a human and as a coworker and as a friend, and I look forward to future conversations with you on, and I'm sure the cult will enjoy this podcast. Yeah. Or any final words you have for the cultists that you'd like to send them on their way, maybe a namaste or a praise Satan? I don't know.
Well, I will say this, that it definitely has given me a unique look on religion. And I probably have a lot of weird ideas out there. Not necessarily weird ideas, but I have strange bars and expectations for myself and others. And maybe in some way I kind of hold people to a too high of a standard in what I expect of them, as far as leaving bullshit behind.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a weird thing to say, but I mean, I feel like, sometimes I guess I feel like I did it so everybody can do it. I guess mentally I know that that's not true, but at least, what I'm ultimately trying to say is I look forward to talking about stuff and getting it out there.
Fantastic. Yeah. That was fantastic. If I can do it, you can do it too. I love it. Yeah. I love that mentality. I mean, hold yourself to a high expectation. Hold others accountable. Hold others to a high expectation. They disappoint you, who fucking cares? If I can do it, you can do it too. Absolutely wonderful to have you on the show. I appreciate it, and I look forward to future talks with you.
Yeah. Cool beans.